Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello, everybody. On this day after Rick Santorum ended his presidential bid, we will talk in a few minutes to a rising star in the Republican Party, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. She is America's youngest governor and a rare Indian American in high office. She also was an early Romney supporter, even in that Newt Gingrich state. So we expect an interesting conversation with Nikki Haley coming up shortly. But first, four police officers were shot over the weekend in Brooklyn, part of a five-year spike in police officer shootings in New York. At the same time, there seems to be a growing displeasure within the NYPD with its own leadership. What's going on the streets and in the department? Murray Weiss is here, DNA Info columnist and criminal justice editor. Hey, Murray, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be there.
Let's take the life and death issues first. So far this year, seven NYPD officers have been wounded, including four on Sunday, making this year the worst for officer shooting injuries since 2007. The four over the weekend were shot in Sheepshead Bay responding to a 911 call. And then there was the death of Officer Peter Fogoski, who was killed in Brooklyn in December, the first police fatality since 2007. Why is this happening now?
Well, that's a good question. I have my own theory on this, Brian. I think a lot of the people that the police are confronting these days are armed, but a number of them have extensive prison sentences behind them. You know, there was a time in New York City where we had the revolving door of justice was the concept, and the media was filled with stories of people getting arrested for crimes and then immediately coming out. The jails were too crowded. We didn't have the money to keep people in prison. There weren't enough prosecutors. I think we've entered an era where that there's a certain percentage of criminals on the street who have done extensive jail time, and the notion of them returning to prison is something that they don't want. And they're a little quicker to kind of fight it out with the police to get away. I think that's an element. The second element, which obviously the city has been championing, Bloomberg and the police commissioner, is just the availability of handguns on the streets of New York. Obviously, there was a time when New York City had an estimated 2 million illegal handguns floating around in the 80s and into the 90s, and obviously crime was through the roof back then. But still, the pipeline of weapons that come from out-of-state manufacturers and dealers is part of the problem in New York.
And the weapon used over the weekend in Brooklyn was an illegal sawed-off military assault rifle with high-velocity rounds. Is there evidence that that came in from one of these states that we always talk about, Virginia or somewhere like that, that has lax gun laws?
Those bullets are not manufactured and easily obtained and sold in New York State. So the answer is yes. They're coming from outside.
And if your theory is right, that some of these ex-cons who are hardened and see a heightened risk of them going back to prison for a long, long time, and maybe that's why some of the police shootings are taking place now, is it relevant or irrelevant that this comes at the same time that violent crime in general is down? I think it's even lower today than it was in 2007, the last time a police officer was shot and killed on the line of duty in New York. It seems incongruous. Crime is down, but more police officers are getting shot.
Well, there's also two other elements in here. You know, obviously, the police department deals with a lot of crazy people. So there's always the element that they're always coming in contact with people who are somewhat crazy. The shooting over the weekend involved a man I don't want to describe as clearly deranged, but it seems to me that part of his motive there was actually perhaps to be shot and killed by the police. His behavior had been irrational before it. And lastly, you can't rule out the notion of coincidence. Sometimes there are just spates of crimes mm-hmm. that happen, and the shootings here of police officers obviously is a bad one, but that may be too. The fact that crime is down, there's an additional element that the police in New York these days, there's another issue that's on everybody's front burner, is that they're being overly aggressive, that they're stopping too many people and perhaps Obviously, the people who are involved in these shootings are carrying guns, so they should be stopped. But, you know, the number of contacts
and that's
between
what
the police
stopping,
and the public is
right.
extremely high.
Certainly, with hundreds of thousands of stops and frisks a year and the number going up every year. And what they're looking for with stops and frisks is guns.
Correct. But the flip side of, you know, approaching, you know, going after all kinds of people in all kinds of situations, there's always a little, there are some people who think that, you know, you have so many contacts with so many people that you can't help but have additional incidents. And stopping and frisking people, by the way, looking for guns, is a very highly skilled, sensitive type of craft in policing. And some, you know, there was a time when they had very skilled and elite units that were, you know, the people who were assigned to actually going out and trying to spot people who had weapons. They were very good at it. They were a tightly controlled unit that did it. Then the unit expanded and it kind of got watered down, and there was a very, you know, sad and tragic shooting involving Amadou Diallo where the police shot and killed an unarmed man who was just taking out his wallet to show him, you know, who he was, and that unit was disbanded. But now you have a policy that spreads throughout the police department of approaching people, stopping, frisking them, and you know, you have to wonder if all the people who are doing the stopping and frisking, you know, are approaching not only just the right people, but they know who the right people are to approach and how to approach them.
Good point. My guest on WNYC is Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor and columnist for the local New York City News website, DNA Info. We can take a few phone calls during the segment, and I think we'll limit it for today only to New York City police officers, because these are issues that involve you. If we happen to have any officers listening right now, with respect to why you think there may be this spike in shootings of police officers, and also, is Ray Kelly losing you? Is the commissioner losing the support of his rank and file after 11 years? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's raise that question by playing part of this radio ad that is now running on some commercial stations placed by the Patrolmen's Benevolent Society, our association, the PBA, their union. This is 40 seconds of the radio spot.
You may be surprised to learn that more stress is put on police officers by NYPD management than by criminals. A perfect example is traffic court. Here's what happens. A motorist gets a ticket and decides to fight it. The traffic judge hears the explanation and cuts the driver a break by dismissing the ticket. Now, an NYPD boss, whose only job is to punish police officers for losing traffic court cases, will look for the slightest clerical error in order to blame the officer. That officer will be fined 3 vacation days worth over $900. Our officers are under constant pressure from management to write more and more summonses. Now, management's making it worse by unfairly punishing police officers who lose a case.
So that was Pat Lynch, the PBA president, and Paul Brown, the NYPD spokesman, disputes these claims. In a written statement, he said, contrary to critics, officers are neither punished for purportedly losing traffic court cases nor for clerical errors. In only those cases where an officer fails to appear or testify without a legitimate or valid reason is the officer subject to potential disciplinary action, the statement said. Murray Weiss, can you suss out the truth of the matter for us?
Well, like all things, there's two sides of the story, and then there's the truth. And I can tell you that the truth is definitely, you know, more on the PBA side here. And this issue surrounding the tickets, you know, is part of a broader story about the kind of pressures that are on the NYPD rank and file to conduct their business. Everything from, you know, the volume of stopping and frisking and micromanaging of detectives. So on this specific issue, I'm on the side of Pat Lynch. I think that they have people watching them very carefully, and any errors that are made that they're punished. You know, it's an unusual, people who don't know the police department that closely don't realize that, you know, Brian Lehrer, you do a TV show, you do a radio program, you mispronounce somebody's name, you make an error, you know, it gets corrected, or maybe the next day you realize it, but you don't get docked like a day's pay or you lose some of your vacation time. There's a lot of checks and balances and disciplinary actions that surround the police world, and you could argue rightly so. They have great powers to arrest and they carry weapons. But they actually lose things that are important to them, like time and money, when they make mistakes. And now, you know, the ticket issue is an extraordinarily interesting one, because on one hand, you had 17 officers who were recently arrested for cutting brakes for their friends and on giving them tickets. And now the result of that is they have internal affairs people sitting in traffic court making sure that all these tickets are handled properly and successfully. And if they're not, then there's a bit of hell to pay, and it comes out of your pocket and your wallet or your time. You know, you think you have 2 weeks vacation? Well, you don't have 2 weeks vacation anymore this year. So, you know, they have a legitimate issue. But the broader topic, if you, you know, if you just look at that as like, okay, that's one thing in the police department, but there are much broader issues that that this speaks to. The way the detective bureau is run, it's very tightly controlled. The notion that if you talk to detectives, the notion of them having some freedom to do the investigation work, and you know, the kind of independence that homicide detectives had is kind of been eroded. That there's laundry lists of checks that you have to sign on this. Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? And it's like, yo, I'm going out to try to catch a killer here. You know, let me do my job.
Yeah.
So there's an erosion of morale in many ways. But to say that Ray Kelly's losing the police department, you can't. No matter how unhappy the cops are, they can't get lost, because they function in a paramilitary universe where the police commissioner has enormous power over them. So
they have to do what they're ordered to do. But maybe you saw Chris Smith's New York Magazine cover story this week, which said, in effect, that Ray Kelly is starting to lose the support of his rank and file, lose the faith of his rank and file. And, you know, I wonder if you think that's true, or if these procedures are new, like docking them pay for these instances. Is Kelly changing as a commissioner over time?
Yes.
in a way that's making the rank and file unhappy?
Yes. But if you're in Chris Smith's article, he speaks to Ray Kelly, and he pretty much says, I'm not here to make people happy. I'm here to, you know, carry out a mission. So he acknowledges that it's happening, and it does. But in terms of, you know, losing his men, I just want to make the point here that I did read Chris Smith's article, obviously. The people can't leave Ray Kelly. He runs the place with a very, you know, there's an iron fist behind that velvet glove. And fear and the power that the bosses and the commissioner have over the people is enormously strong and powerful. So
what
is
the
they have to march? They have to jump, and it's a matter of,
yes,
if they say how high, you got to jump that high.
But at the same time, here's the union on the radio complaining that the department is docking them vacation days for losing traffic ticket cases. So what are they trying to accomplish with that by talking over the heads of the commissioner to the general public?
They're trying to get some public support, obviously, for, you know, an understanding of how difficult their job is. I think, you know, the public wants safe streets, you know, and as long as that is the public's number one priority, and that's been the mission of the police department, and quite successfully over the past two decades, the public's generally happy. Lately, the public is beginning to see some minor flashpoints that are troubling to them or certain communities, i.e. stopping and frisking, the Muslim alleged surveillance. And I think Pat Lynch has found an issue that he wants the public to know that, you know, we are still the good guys here, but we are functioning in a tough environment. And, you know, the PBA has had their own issues over the ticket fixing issue and some others, and I think they're trying to get a little high ground here for the public to understand that they're out there fighting the crime. They're the ones who are putting their lives on the line. Four cops are shot just the other day, and they think they found an issue here that they can remind the public that, you know, we are the good guys functioning in a very difficult environment.
Let's take a call from a police officer in the Bronx. Officer, thank you so much for calling in. How are you today?
Good, good. Hi, Mario. Good to hear you. I just wanted to bring up, there were so many points I wanted to make, but real quick on the rise in violence, and we're getting this through interviews with multiple perps. Perps are no longer scared to carry a gun. 5 or 6 years ago, perps were petrified to walk down the street carrying a gun because of the stop, question, and frisk. Once they saw a friend be stopped or another person in the street, whether or not they were connected to them, it was almost like a force multiplier. And guns were being hidden in trash cans, hidden in mailboxes, hidden in tires of cars. And what that does is not, it takes the gun out of the waistband and makes that person take an extra second, an extra minute to make a decision about whether they're going to shoot somebody, especially a cop. And with the publicity around stop, question, and frisk, a lot of the new officers are not trained in how to do it. They're not sure on how to do it. A lot of the new supervisors have never been sector cops or never been patrol cops. They've been impact cops, but never actually been a patrol cop, which is a completely different ballgame, and they're not teaching the younger cops how to do that, and that's where we're losing it.
Is there a policy fix for that, officer, for either of those things?
You know, there has to be better training, and training doesn't come from the police academy. Training comes from veteran cops, and veteran cops have to be on the street with the rookies, showing them how to do it. You can't have a band of 30 rookies running around in an impact team. They're not learning how to be police officers. They're learning how to react to things, and they're learning how to generate numbers, but they're not learning how to... The art of being a police officer comes from you and your partner dealing with a situation and deciding how that situation is eventually going to unfold.
So we have less experienced officers on the street than we did 10 years ago, less experienced supervisors, and fewer cops after the cutbacks, trying to keep crime
down
to the same levels.
Brian, the other thing, in terms of morale in the police department, I've never seen it as low. I've been around for a while, and I'm in a fairly high investigative position. I've never seen morale as bad as it is. People who are actually on the street doing police work have the feeling that there is nobody backing them up. The ticket scandal was heartbreaking. A custom, whether or not it was right, is not the issue. The problem had been solved over a year ago with the new summons tracking system. Tickets weren't getting fixed. But the people that are driving this investigation have done this as a matter of course. Every single person who has commented on this investigation, from the DA's office to the police commissioner's office, has had a ticket taken care of for somebody. There was somebody working in the police commissioner's office himself whose job was to take care of tickets for politically connected people. That came out in the Daily News. But the people that are getting arrested for this are street cops. The disconnect between downtown and the working cop has reached epic proportions. And then when you factor in the hiring of that class, I believe it was 4 or 5 years ago, the $28,000 class, the standards were dropped so dramatically to get people to take the job with that class. We're still paying the price. Those are the officers that are getting arrested for criminal activity. Those are the officers that are writing reports that I can't read. Those are the officers that are making decisions in the field that don't make sense, and they're not getting trained correctly. And those of us that are actually doing police work, high-end police work, we don't feel like we're backed up by anybody. We don't feel like we're backed up by some of the new guys on the street. We definitely don't feel like we're backed up from downtown. We definitely don't get any support from, you know, there's a good relationship with every DA's office on a prosecutor to detective level, but when it gets above that, it's so acrimonious that nothing gets done.
Officer, I really appreciate you raising your voice, and we got to go in a minute because we have Governor Nikki Haley standing by, but thank you very much for all of what you said. And Murray Weiss, how much of that rings true? It seemed like it was a real police officer, and seems like it was from the heart.
No, that's all true. If I can make one quick point before you go here on the issue of morale that he touched on and how they don't feel supported and how the there's boots on their necks working. You know, I've been saying this a lot lately to people. In the early 1980s, the police force only had about 25,000 cops. So that's like 10,000 less than we have now. There was a tidal wave of crime going on at that time. Crack. There was a small police force. The murder rate was going through the roof. There was 100 homicides in some of the precincts. Today we only have 500 or 600 citywide. Precincts had over 100 alone in a single precinct. Anyway, at that time, the cops were fighting a tidal wave of crime. They all felt they lockstep. They were working together. They were covering each other's backs. They were fighting all these criminals. It was a lawless city almost. And if you told a detective then or a cop then, hey, there'll be a time in New York City when the murder rate will be under 600, the number of robberies is going to be cut by 80%, and that year is going to be 2012, how would you feel about being a cop at that time? And they would all look at you and say, that would be like dying and going to police heaven. I would be the happiest cop in America.
Not so much.
Crime is at that level, and the feeling of the police is exactly the opposite. Instead of being happy, they're all complaining about the way they're being treated, the way they're being supported.
And they're getting shot more than 5 years ago. Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor for the neighborhood-based news service around New York City, DNA Info. On the web. Thank you very much, Murray.
Pleasure to be with you, Brian.
Governor Nikki Haley next on this day after Rick Santorum ended his presidential bid. She's a rising star in the Republican Party, an early Romney supporter in that Gingrich voting state, America's youngest governor, and a rare Indian American in high office. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley next.
WNYC is supported by Sanford Smith, presenting the New York Antiquarian Book Fair with over 200 international exhibitors this weekend at the Park Avenue Armory, located at Park Avenue and 67th Street. More information at sanfordsmith.com. JerseyArts.com, featuring Culture Vultures, an in-depth blog and podcast about the arts in the Garden State, including weekly news, articles, interviews, and more. Details at jerseyarts.com/blog.
The U.S. economy is showing signs of recovery, and people are once again finding jobs. I'm Farai Chidea. Join me in the green space along with job placement experts, an economist, and a laid-off worker as we explore who's finding work, what kind of work, and what comes next. It's the Next New York Conversation, free Tuesday, April 24th. To RSVP, click on events calendar at wnyc.org/thegreenspace.
Now you can make your smartphone even smarter. Download the new WNYC mobile app. Wherever you are, you'll be able to check on the day's news stories, listen to WNYC live on the air, and hear your favorite shows and podcasts whenever you want. You can even set the alarm to wake up to...
Good morning, this is WNYC. I'm Sotirios Johnson.
Download the free WNYC app at wnyc.org/mobile.